We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members within your packets, you have the May 12th minutes. Representative Schultz, you want to move those minutes?
I move the minutes from May 12th.
Representative Schultz moves the minutes from May 12th. Members' corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the May 12th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Members in your packets, you have House File 659. This is the pension bill. I will move it to the general register. Representative Driscoll, I understand that you're going to give us a walkthrough. I see Ms. Lincheski's here as well. I think if she can come to the table too in case folks have other questions. But with that, Representative O'Driscoll, if you can walk us through, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the State Government Finance Committee. This is the 2016 Omnibus Retirement Pensions Bill. And we are, in the interest of time, running this through the House and the Senate processes right now. This evening, the Pension Commission will meet and take care of some final housekeeping details as relates to the bill. The time frame that we're looking at, this seems to be working and it's moving in both the House and the Senate. So I thank you for your patience and indulgence today. In the pensions bill, I will just give you a general overview into some different categories, and then if there are specifics that folks would like to talk about, I'm happy to have that conversation as well. Generally, if we take a look at the summary, if you have that available, in Article Number 1, starting in the middle of page 2, MSRS, TRA, St. Paul Teachers Post-Retirement Adjustments, Article 2, Minnesota State Retirement, MSRS, Article 3, TRA Retirement or Teachers Retirement Association, and into the top of page 3, Article 4. All four of those sections are what we would normally see from each of the respective pension plans that provides us with an update, if you will, on some housekeeping details that affect the different bills that the different parts of legislation with those particular organizations. With that, I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski if she wants to provide any other comment or detail related to those items. Ms. Lincheski.
Ms. Lincheski, I think it would be helpful for us to kind of walk through each section with the changes, so just to give members an idea. We don't have all the members that serve on the Pensions Commission, and I just think it would be helpful for them so they know what changes are happening with this piece. So, Ms. Lincheski, if you want to take it from there.
You would like to start with Section 1?
Yep.
Okay. So, Section 1, I will be using the summary that we provided here, starting on page 7 to go through the bill. Section 1 provides for an employer contribution increase. This is only with respect to St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association, and the increase is 0.5% of salary, and that will be effective as of July 1, 2018.
And Ms. Lincheski, I'm just going to pause you there for a second to make sure every member understands where we're at. In your packets, you received this handout that looked like this. She says on page 7, she's going through each section. You'll see on the right-hand side, there's a summary. With that, Ms. Lincheski, if you can proceed. She just described Section 1. She's going on to Section 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 2 removes the COLA triggers and makes conforming changes. The COLA trigger is an automatic increase in the COLA that occurs when the plan reaches a certain funding threshold. That is being removed. And for this Section 2, that relates only to St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. Section 3 removes the COLA triggers with respect to the MSRS plans, two of them, the general plan and the correctional plan. And then thirdly, removes it with respect to the Teachers Retirement Association. Section 4 extends the amortization period for the Teachers Retirement Association plan from 2037 to 2046, so it'll be a new 30-year amortization period. Section 5 reduces the COLA, and this is with respect to the MSRS plans, all of them except the State Patrol and Judges plan. It reduces the COLA from 2% to 1.75%, and that is effective January 1, 2017. A similar change appears in Section 6 for the Teachers Retirement Association. That COLA reduction, though, is from 2% to 1%. Both of these COLA reductions are only one-year reductions, so the COLA will return to 2% on January 1, 2018. With sections 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, those are really technical changes. So these are changes that are necessary because we're removing the COLA trigger language from the primary sections for the plans. And so there was some conforming changes that needed to be made to the judge's plan, the sections in the statutes relating to the judge's plan, and to the state patrol plan. Similarly, for Section 11, that also is removing conforming changes so that we don't have COLA trigger language in that section of the statutes. Article 2, Section 1, this is on page 8 of the summary. These are all administrative provisions, so they are reasonably non-substantive. They are primarily technical changes that came up that the plans are proposing. Section 1 of Article 2 then adds a reference to the MS General Plan refund payment provisions. Section 2 clarifies that the plan can accept transfers from the general fund. This is a change initiated by MMB, Minnesota Management and Budget. Section 3 adds an exception from the SWIFT allotment and encumbrance system for transactions within the MSRS defined contribution plan. Section 4 revises the qualifications the board must consider when hiring an executive director and adds references to a deputy director position. Section 5 authorizes the executive director to appoint a deputy director with board approval. Section 6 clarifies that repayment of a refund may be made in partial payments during employment or in a lump sum up to 6 months after termination of employment. Section 7 ties the state patrol plan refund repayment provision to the MSRS general refund repayment provision, so that's a reference back to the change that was made in Section 1. Section 8 again ties the MSRS unclassified refund repayment provision to the MSRS general. And similarly, Section 9 makes the same change with regard to the judge's plan. Article 3, Section 1 removes obsolete references to the Duluth School District and to Minsky. These are again cleanup changes, non-substantive. Section 2 of Article 3 adds a definition of former spouse. Section 3 of Article 3 revises the qualifications the Board of Trustees must consider when hiring an executive director. This is the same change that was made over in the MSRS section. Section 4 authorizes the executive director to designate a deputy executive director with board approval, similar to the same change in MSRS. Again, with respect to TRA, Section 5 of Article 3 extends for 1 to 5 years the number of years of authorized medical leave that can be considered allowable service credit. Section 6, again, with respect to TRA, adds a conforming change to reflect the current method of counting service credit based on portions of a year rather than the number of days. Section 7 specifies that if a former spouse dies before the end of a specified payment period, remaining payments are to be made in accordance with the former spouse's beneficiary form, or if none, to the estate. This is a fix that was needed because there was frequently benefits being paid to an estate that should have gone in accordance with the beneficiary form. Section 8 clarifies that if a member has multiple designated beneficiaries, each beneficiary has the right to apply for an annuity separate from the others. And Section 9 clarifies that a totally and permanently disabled member is entitled to a disability benefit only if the member has not yet reached retirement age. Section 10 of Article 3, on page 10 of the summary, this again relates to Teachers Retirement Association. It removes the requirement that TRA must wait 60 days before notifying a school district or charter school of delinquent contributions, allowing TRA to contact MMB for collection earlier. Section 11 removes the fine that a school district must pay if it fails to report to TRA the beginning and ending dates of the school work year. Section 12, again, is a cleanup provision. It removes obsolete references to the Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund. Article 4 of the bill relates to PARA, the Public Employees Retirement Association. Section 1 of Article 4 merges the service credit purchase provision into the salary purchase provision to provide one method for purchasing missed periods of service. Section 2 clarifies that if a member dies before receiving a retirement annuity, any prior disability or survivor benefits paid by the fund must be deducted from the amount refunded to the beneficiary. Section 3 clarifies that if a member terminates public service and elects to take a refund, any prior disability benefits paid by the fund must be deducted from the refund. Section 4 specifies that the Hennepin Healthcare Systems supervisors and managers of paramedics are covered by PARA if they are also full-time and certified as a paramedic or emergency medical technician. Section 5 repeals unnecessary language or obsolete provisions in the statute. Article 5, Section 1. This article relates to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. Section 1 removes obsolete references to applicable first-class city and instead refers to St. Paul. This is a result of Duluth teachers being merged into TRA. So no longer there's only one first-class city now with the plan. Section 2 clarifies the periods during which 8.5% or 8% interest rates apply. A similar change in Section 3 relating to the periods that an 8.5% or an 8% interest rate applies. Section 4, a similar change. Article 6 relates generally to the retirement plans, Section 356 of the Minnesota statutes. Section 1, and I'm on page 11, Section 1 clarifies that the applicable augmentation rate for a combined service annuity is the rate that applies under the plan in which the annuity was earned. These are clarification changes that were needed because of some confusion over the what the statute currently provides. Section 2 clarifies again the periods that 8.5% or an 8% interest rate applies. Section 3, a similar change regarding the interest rate periods. Section 4 revises, Section 4 through Section, Sections 4 through Section 8 all relate to the Federal Internal Revenue Code and are new provisions that needed to be added to just clarify the portions of the tax code, the federal tax code, that apply to the plans. Those are technical changes, but were needed in order to make sure that the plans and the world understands what does apply to the state's public retirement plans. Section 9 starts a number of changes that were made to Minnesota statutes to clean up the appeals procedures. So those changes now appear in Sections 9 through 21. So that all of those sections are clarifications, cleanup, elimination of obsolete provisions, all relate to the appeals procedures that apply to all of the state retirement plans, but for St. Paul teachers and the volunteer firefighters. Section 22 of Article 6 repeals obsolete provisions. Article 7, Section 1 relates to the actuarial assumption changes that needed to be made as a result of the completion of experience studies for the plans. This relates to all of the plans. Changes were made to the salary increase assumption, to the salary increase assumptions for all the plans, and the interest rate assumption was changed only for Teachers Retirement Association, went from 8.5% to 8%. And then changes also to the payroll growth assumption for the Teachers Retirement Association. Article 8 relates to the Volunteer Firefighters Relief Association. These are all changes that were requested and proposed by the Volunteer Working Group, a Volunteer Firefighter Working Group, which is chaired by the auditor. Section 1 of Article 8 eliminates the requirement that relief associations must reimburse the Spring Lake, Park, Blaine, Moundsview Fire Department for certain administrative expenses that that fire department incurred as a result of transferring its plan to PARA for administration. Section 2 adds a new requirement that the fire chief annually certify each volunteer firefighter's service credit to the Associated Relief Association and municipality, and provides a notice procedure with regard to that that certification. Section 3 restricts firefighters from receiving relief association service credit for the same hours for which the PARA plan has already provided coverage. Moving on to page 14. Section 4 of Article 8, again relating to the Volunteer Firefighter Relief Associations. Section 4 expands the Relief Association membership eligibility to volunteer emergency medical personnel if the Associated Relief Association's bylaws and the municipal entity authorizes the addition of that group of newly eligible individuals. Section 5 adds defined contribution relief associations to the provisions for combined service pensions and moves the combined service pensions provision from one section to another so that it will apply broadly to both types of defined benefit and defined contribution relief associations. Section 6 increases the maximum lump sum service pension amount per year of credited service for defined benefit relief associations. Section 7 provides default procedures for allocating special fund assets after a joint powers fire department dissolves and the joint powers agreement is silent on the asset allocation. Section 8 lowers the vesting period requirement for the Eden Prairie Relief Association for retired firefighters who return to active service. Section 9 relates only to the Coleraine and Bovee Volunteer Firefighters Association. They merged, and this changes their effective date from January 1, 2017 to September 1, 2016 so that they can qualify for the state aid they would otherwise be entitled to. Section 10 repeals obsolete language and moves some language. Article 9 relates to the MSRS retirement plan. These are slightly more substantive than the earlier section. Section 1 adds a reference for submitting an application for total and permanent disability benefits. It adds a reference, and it relates to Section 2, which is the more substantive provision. This allows for an extension of the 18-month disability application period in the event that the member has a cognitive impairment that prevented him or her from understanding the 18-month deadline. Article 10, PARA, relates to PARA. It is an addition of a second definition for line of duty death. I'm on page 15, Article 10, Section 1. This relates to the Hometown Heroes Act changes that were applied in other areas as well. This allows PARA to refer the decision of whether a line of duty death to the Commissioner of Public Safety, and in accordance with that determination, PARA then will pay out death benefits. Article 11, Section 1 These are generally applicable retirement changes. All of Article 11 is generally applicable retirement changes. Section 1 increases the maximum employer contribution from $5,000 to $7,000 per year per employee to the Labor's National Industrial Pension Plan. This is under the exception to supplemental plans generally in this section of the Minnesota statutes. Section 2 of Article 11 allows plans to accept additional sources of payments. Prior to this, they were not permitted to accept life insurance death benefits. They are now, in addition to gifts, donations, bequests, they are also permitted to receive life insurance benefits. Section 3 of Article 11 repeals duplicative provisions. Article 12 relates to small group retirement changes. Section 1 permits a group of 22 Minnesota Department of Transportation employees to purchase up to 3 months of service back in 1989 so that they will now have Rule of 90 eligibility. Section 2 through 4 addresses four individuals total who were erroneously included in the Minsky IRAP or defined contribution account when they should have been allowed to transfer to PARA or TRA. This allows for sort of the correction of an error that was made when they were not given proper notice and so then did not make the election to transfer to PARA or TRA as they should have been permitted to do. Article 13, technical corrections. Really, all of these are removal of obsolete references, cleanup changes that were needed as a result of other changes made elsewhere in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Ms. Lincheski. Chair O'Driscoll, any other comments you want to make to it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to give folks a little bit of some practical on this. What Ms. Lincheski just wrapped up with, very close at the end, with some of those persons who might have had the opportunity to be in a defined benefits plan versus a defined contributions plan. There were some administrative errors, there were some clerical errors perhaps, or the like. And so they come before the Pension Commission through their senator or through their House member. And the Pension Commission hears that and says, yes, that was an error, or no, that wasn't an error. And if it was an error, then we allow the individual to repay the amount of money that they should have been paying into the pension, and the organization that was in error to match that so that the individual can proceed with what benefit they would have been entitled to. A couple of other things that are actually very good reforms in here. I'm going to compliment Representative Howe on one of the things that he did. Ms. Lincheski talked about the Heroes Act, persons killed in the line of duty. The last thing that a person who has a family member who's involved in law enforcement that might have been killed or died in the line of duty wants to do is deal with the bureaucratic process to get benefits. And Representative Howe, working with others, consolidated that into one agency where it was into three different agencies, and that's in the pensions bill to be able to provide very much a token relief, if you will, to the families who have had a devastating loss. One of the other things, speaking of public safety, this came from the city of Eden Prairie. They were having difficulty finding coverage for daytime coverage in their volunteer fire department, and if you've ever spoken with your city officials, you know that's a problem as well. They have had some people who have retired, have received their lump sum benefit from being involved in the Relief Association, and they've agreed to come back, but if they were going to be vested again, they'd have to do another 20 years. Well, what this does is modifies it to allow them to come back, and the city is going to have to be paying that benefit to someone. They're bringing someone back who's skilled, who can provide some of that coverage. We said if it's good enough for Eden Prairie, we wanted to put that statewide. So there's a provision in here that allows for all volunteer fire departments within the state of Minnesota to do that. We have a lot of nice policy reforms in here, and there is no fiscal cost to the bill that you see in front of you to the state of Minnesota. And so, Madam Chair, with that, I would stand for questions or if there's testimony, however you want to proceed.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify on this bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Um, Madam Chair, my name is Brian Rice. I'm here this afternoon representing AFSCME Council 5. Julie Belial was on her way, but in her absence, I'll speak on behalf of Council 5. AFSCME Council 5 is very concerned about the reduction in the COLA in the bill for MSRS employees. Obviously, as Representative O'Driscoll explained in the other proceeding, this has been a challenge to try to find a solution to funding. AFSCME Council 5 did support the MSRS board's support, where there would have been an increase in employer contributions along with the reduction in the COLA. We understand that's not possible this session, and that Representative O'Driscoll has been making major efforts to trying to find a solution to this. But the concern about the reduction to the retirees is a very important one, concerning to MSRS, and we do not support that change in the bill.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rice is correct. We've been presented with some major challenges on this. The actuarial report that came back that showed Americans are living longer, healthier, and happier, which is all good. Men are living about 2.1 years longer than they did 15 years ago. Women are living 2.3 or plus years longer than they used to, which means that in your retirement, pension benefits are paid out longer, and there's a deficiency that results because of that. And so the plans have proposed what senators and House members, both parties, fell out of their chair when they saw the numbers that it's going to cost to do that. There was just no fiscal way for us to be able to do anything this year with those kinds of costs. And so what we did is we saw a way to be able to separate two things. One is to capture some of the COLA savings in a one-year reduction in COLAs, keeping everybody working toward a solution. And secondly, next year in the fiscal year, the new biennium, when we set budgets, it allows that legislature to make the determination about how they would choose to fund those and the mechanism in which they would like to fund those. Most likely, it'll end up having to be something that will result in further negotiations. This gives us time in this short session to be able to have those conversations and to be able to move forward. So we saw a way to be able to do a division of that and still be able to preserve the integrity of what came from the plans.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go to questions. I have Representative Johnson. Let me pause you for a second. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify for this? Okay. Representative Johnson. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question, Representative Driscoll, on the bill. So as I understand it, in GovOps, an amendment was offered and added on dealing with some of the sustainability features that Mr. Rice was referencing. And this bill is going to go to the third you say on the floor, the Pension Commission's meeting tonight. So what happens then if the Pension Commission is not in favor of the changes that were made? One of the concerns I have, it seems like it's kind of backwards that we should be taking recommendations from the Pension Commission, since presumably they have more expertise than we do on some of the nuances and intricacies of a complicated issue. So that's my question and concern, and curious what your thoughts are on it.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, that is probably the best question that we're going to hear all day relative to this. And the first thing that I would say is the members of the Pension Commission are clearly aware of this. Most of the information that we had and the things that Ms. Lincheski walked through were already worked on and agreed upon in those policy things that we talked about over a month ago. Everybody in the commission has been working to try to figure out a way to resolve this, and everybody has been putting ideas to the table and working on this. It was late on Friday that we came to this decision, and quite literally I took all the House members who were in GOP and the Senate members who were GOP, and Senator Pappas, the Vice Chair, agreed to contact the members of the Pension Commission who were DFL and the DFL members of the Senate to walk through this idea to see if this was plausible, if people were open to this, and we began to work out to contact the plans over the weekend and to contact the interested parties on this. So my assumption, based on the conversations that I've had with everybody to date, nobody's completely happy with it. I'll be the first to admit that. But there seems to be general acceptance that this is the best of a bad situation that we can do in 2016 for the pension plan.
Representative Johnson? Representative Kahn?
Yes, I have a question on Article 8, Volunteer Fire Firefighter Relief Association modifications.
What page are you on, Representative Khan?
Okay, sorry, I'm doing the... Okay, page 4 of the summary.
Page 4 of the summary, okay.
And Article 8 is the part in the bill. And I'm interested in what's the progress. First of all, I'm interested in understanding exactly what the statewide volunteer firefighter retirement plan is. Is that the thing which then uses the State Board of Investment to just tell us what the statewide volunteer firefighter retirement plan is?
Chair, I think I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski to start with that, part of the conversation for Representative Khan.
Ms. Lincheski.
Okay, the Volunteer Firefighters Relief Association is a collection of many plans throughout the state. I don't want to give a number. I'm not sure there's many tens of many plans. And they, I believe, invest their own assets. So they send us a quarterly form that tells us what they're invested in. I don't believe they are invested through the State Board of Investment.
Representative Khan.
Madam Chairman, I thought at one point there was an ability for the plans to form a group that would then be invested through the... At one point, the state volunteer for every single plan had their own investment, that took care of their own investments. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with this was that many of them were done, since they're local plans, they were done through the local banks, and they were getting... you know, kind of as a favor to the people who were just this collegial agreement. And they were getting very, very much lower returns than anyone that was being invested through the statewide board of investment. And so several of us worked on trying to change this in many ways. It was finally made that voluntarily there was an entity that was formed, and I thought it might be this, that was then handling the investments for these plans. And I guess I want to know what's happened to that and how this differs from that and so forth.
Well, it looks like... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just it. But the point was to increase the investment returns. The investment returns are much more important than the contributions in general and dealing with the viability of a plan. And so that was an attempt, but yet there was this great desire for a large number of volunteer plans to retain their independence. So this was a way for them to retain their independence, yet make a decision that would give them a better return on investment. So I'm just interested in what's happened to that.
Well, Representative Khan, it looks like we have someone here that can help out Ms. Lincheski to talk about that issue. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Doug Anderson. I'm executive director of the Public Employees Retirement Association, and we do have a statewide volunteer firefighters fund that does have, I think it's about 100 entities that have joined over the last 5 or 6 years that do participate in the State Board of Investment as their investment vehicle.
Okay. Representative Khan.
But that's not this, or is that this?
Mr. Anderson.
I'm looking at what's listed on page 4 of the summary in Article 8, Statewide Volunteer Firefighter Retirement Plan.
That is the Statewide Volunteer Firefighter Retirement Plan, yes.
Oh, okay. So it's now invested, and so those are all investing through the State Board of Investment. Are they doing one
Correct.
Set of investments for the whole group?
Correct.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Khan.
Yes. Okay, thank you. And how many are left to what's... You said there are about 100 or so. How many aren't in it?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Khan, I believe it's around 600 or 700 that are not in the plan.
Okay.
Representative Khan.
And Madam Chairman, are we looking at the return at their... at one point, I know I require this to be done. I don't know what's happened to it. Are we looking at the individual... Well, what I think was happening is that we had to have a report of the individual return on investment for all of those plans, and it had to be compared to the return on investment if they were invested in this statewide plan, and that information had to be delivered to them. Is that still happening?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Khan, I'm not aware of what requirements exist outside of the statewide volunteer plan.
Representative Kahn, I think Ms. Lencheski can help.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, and I'm sorry for my earlier error here. Okay. There are a bunch of plans that then are commingled, that their investments are over with, as Doug mentioned, but there are a number of plans then that we do collect a report from them, I believe, every quarter in our office at the commission here. So those are being reported to us. As far as I know, there is no requirement that we take those forms and compare them to, say, SBI returns, and that is not being done. I'm not aware of a statute that requires that, and that's not something that we do in my office.
Okay, it might...
Representative Kahn.
I know it was done at one point. It might have been just for, you know, might have just been a terminal thing. I'd actually like an amendment prepared for the floor that would just require that to be done. It's not a that this is all information that's collected, and so and what I want done is I want the collected, I want a report that gives the collected information, then that also requires it to be reported to each one of the funds. Is that a, can somebody do that for me?
Okay.
Mark Shepard's already writing. I obviously don't want to do it now. I think I'd rather do it.
Okay. So you're going to work on it?
Yes.
Okay.
But that's the general principle. And the general principle is that there are a bunch of these funds. I knew there were many. I didn't remember it was in the 600s and 700s. But and I think when we first started it, there were only 25 who agreed to go into this plan. But I just think that members ought to know, particularly the ones that have a benefit that's specifically related to their return on investment, that has their plan made a decision that will get them the highest possible return on their investment.
Okay.
And it doesn't require them to make any decision except have the information be public. So,
Representative Carlson.
Excuse me. I was, Madam Chair, reading something here. I'd like maybe Representative O'Driscoll or Ms. Lencheski to comment about the deficiency issue. I had some meetings with the pension people, or a meeting, early in the year, and that was a major concern. And Madam Chair, the reason I raised the question 2 years ago, I was very involved with the deficiency issues involving the Duluth pension plan. And costs, if we wouldn't have addressed it then, when you begin to look at the numbers that the plan provided for me, accelerate very rapidly in terms of what the future cost would be. And so I'm just interested maybe in the author and Ms. Lencheski commenting about that, because as I read our summary here, it looks like we're taking just a very minor step in addressing the deficiency.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson. Going back to where I was saying that we were able to separate out the two issues, we looked at the recommendations that came from the plans. There were two trigger dates that were in there, January 1st of 2017 being the first trigger date, which is when COLAs would be applied to pensionees. And what was scheduled to happen in the plan's proposals was MSRS was going to go from 2% down to 1.75%, and TRA would go from a 2% COLA down to a 1% COLA. For the one-year period of time, that's what this bill does, is puts that part of it into it. If you read a little bit deeper into the report and follow the timeline, it says that the stabilization contribution increases that were proposed by the plans would begin on July 1st of 2017 or fiscal 18. So what happens is if we can separate those, it gives the commission, the plans, the interested parties more time, and the legislature to work on a plan to deal with those deficiencies and still hit the time frames and the bogeys that the plans were looking at with that July 1st of 2017 or the beginning of fiscal 18.
Representative Carlson.
So, Madam Chair, that's a crucial point. So the plans, because my whole point was that the earlier you address these issues, the better off you are. And if you don't address them early, the costs just accelerate very rapidly. And so you're saying that that plan and the adjustment would fit with the plans we're talking about in terms of their timeline with the legislation that's before us?
Chair Driscoll.
Representative Carlson, what I'm saying is that the first part that we've taken in here is the first timeline, which is January 1st. And then at 6 months after that, to the July 1st, 17, the new fiscal biennium, that's when the plans were suggesting that the contribution increases would begin at that point. So it gives us a little over maybe 13 months or so to be able to work to that resolution as a legislature and with the commission and with others to continue to strive to find a workable solution. There was no money that was going to be appropriated this second year of the biennium. They said we've been working for 30 days to try to find options and solutions on this, and there was no money that was made available in the House, the Senate, or the governor's supplement to even be able to begin doing something right now. And that quickly became an issue of there is no money, how do we be able to fund these? And there was a lot of angst when members, and you may have also received from your local school districts, when it became known how much of an impact this would be on the individual school districts without any state funding. So with no money available in 16, no for sure way to fund that other than have the school districts and the government agencies pick up those funds right now by putting in the contribution increases. It puts it into the TALES, and as someone who's involved in Ways and Means and has been the chair of that, TALES is not an unfamiliar term in your vocabulary. And there was a lot of skittishness, Democrats, Republicans, House and Senate members, about looking forward to that, which ultimately drove us to where we are today, trying to take it in bite sizes to be able to receive some of the benefits, but still keeping our options open on solutions.
Representative Carlson.
I was going to say, if I could just share one other thought, the cost savings to the plans right now for doing these reductions, and the plan executive directors can correct me, but they told us yesterday in government operations that MSRS would save about $18 million and TRA would save about $63 million. So about $81 million would be saved by the plans for doing that 1 year. And that was something that everybody found appealing to this plan because it does do that savings. While we still continue to work for a more global solution, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, I guess what I'm interested in is the, as you call them, the tails, or what happens in 13 months, or what the recommendation of the Pension Commission will be in the next 13 months, because I understand what you were saying about the COLAs, and I followed that in the memo that we had here, but there is the need for some funding to go into these plans. And my only point is the sooner we do that, the better. And if we're following the plan, the dates that the plans were proposing, then that 13-month period, it sounds like, becomes very crucial in terms of what the Pension Commission recommends and what you get in the targets on the House side and on the Senate side then for the next budget cycle. And my only point, Madam Chair, is that when I was looking at the Duluth plan, when I referenced that, we looked at a variety of different scenarios, and committee members here probably would be surprised at how rapidly those deficiencies grow and how rapidly the amount of money that you need to address the deficiency becomes each and every year that goes by. And so in the end, we made the decision that we would address the Duluth situation earlier rather than later. And that was one of the differences, quite frankly, at the time between myself and my Senate counterpart at the time, whether we would do it at that point in time 2 years ago or if we would wait a year or two. And when we did get the numbers, then both of us agreed that we had to do something then rather than later, and that's my entire point, Madam Chair. But thank you.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess I have my similar questions here and similar comments. We've heard about the actuarial changes, and that's causing the deficiency or adding to the deficiency in the plans, and it's unfortunate, Matt, that what we're doing here is one piece of this. In past years when we've had deficiencies and we work to try and correct those, we've used a three-legged stool of employer contributions, employee contributions, and the retiree is taking part of the, absorbing part of the cost of fixing the plans. What we're doing here is just basically dumping this all on the retirees, and that's unfortunate that we're doing it that way. I mean, in past years when we've had huge deficits, we found money to put into the plans and help them become whole. And this year we were talking about $900 million surplus, and we're doing nothing. And I think that's an opportunity that we have lost here. Again, the more money, as Representative Carlson alluded to, the more money you put in early grows, and that's part of the beauty of pension plans is you put the money in. It sits there a long time, but it has a chance to grow. Putting a little money in the front end helps them grow so that it's less of a size, as Representative O'Driscoll said, we're taking bite-sized chunks at it instead of taking having to eat the whole animal at once. So, Madam Chair, I guess I just, to me, it's just like I said, I'm a little disappointed that we're letting this opportunity go by with the huge surplus that we have at the state level, that we're not taking some of that and dedicating it to take care of these pension plans and help them start on their way to getting fully funded.
Chair O'Driscoll, comment?
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson knows from my comments when he made the similar statement yesterday in committee, and he and I had a chance on the floor to visit and to kind of summarize with that. And Representative Nelson's been involved in union negotiations, as have I, and I've said it seems like everybody's a little unhappy about this, and maybe we have the solution that we can work with and live with for right now. I do take a little bit of umbrage with we're putting it completely on the backs of the retirees. No, what we're doing is we're taking for 1 year that part of it, pulling the triggers out of here as well, which is something I hadn't mentioned, which are automatic COLA increases based on percentage of funding, which again helps save the plan money. There was no one that I've talked to in this conversation at all in the process who thought that was a bad idea to immediately relieve those long-term liabilities, and that we could take those COLAs and save $81 million right now for the plans. It seemed like it was a doable thing. If we were saying, nope, we're going to put the full 9 yards out there on the COLA reduction, then I would say that that's dumping it on the retirees. A one-year reprieve is saving us $81 million while it still keeps us all as friends moving forward trying to figure this out in a situation where, again, the governor didn't have anything in his budget, the Senate didn't, and the House did, and we can say for whatever reasons, but those are the realities that we're working with right now. And I don't have the ability to unilaterally change those or be the superhero that sometimes people think you are as a chair.
Representative Looney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, reaction to Representative Kahn and actually Representative Carlson and Representative Nelson's comments. I'm a sales guy, so it all depends on the marketability of the product, but you're right that when you load it up towards the front, and now we use a typical employee that is about to receive their gold watch, or now it would probably be a gold cell phone case, but they've done their 30 years. That dollar that they put in on day one doesn't just get matched by return. They're going to get $6 added into that. So Representative Kahn's statement is exactly right. You do not retire on what you save. You retire on the gain or the return you get on what you save. And anything in an employee, and this is, I think, an important thing for anyone either in a pension or just looking at doing some kind of savings for retirement does, is that the earlier and the more you put the money in front and then let it go to work, it is a big deal. The question I have has to do with page 15 on Article 11, Item 2, just help me understand this to the testifier, where it says that one of the changes will allow the plan to accept additional sources of payment, including gifts, donations, bequests of life insurance and death. What exactly, could you give me an example of that?
Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair is laughing, as am I, because this is my provision and Representative Albright, as we all said on the Pension Commission. This is a provision that I've asked to have included. And I'll give you a little background on this. One of the things that we were looking at for funding sources, and it actually came from some testimony that we had where some individuals were saying, you know, I've been committed to the industry, I'm committed to the profession, there are times that I'd like to be able to do things. And I thought, well, why don't we have a provision that the state could accept bequests and bequests of personal property or monies from those who may be so inclined to contribute to the TRA through their will or through their estate, or leave the state of Minnesota's pension plans as a beneficiary in their life insurance policy. when we started digging into that, we found out that, in fact, some of our plans do have that provision and some didn't. So we cleaned that language up to make it permissible for all of the plans to be able to accept that. That's literally what it is.
Okay, so...
Representative Lunin.
Madam Chairman, and I understand, I follow that. I'd like to see it, but yeah, I follow it. So an individual can't front load in on... Okay.
No, Madam Chair, no. Representative Lunin, that's not what this is that they can advance pay. This is if someone wants to leave the state of Minnesota in their will or the pension plan or a specific plan or name them as the beneficiary in their life insurance policy.
Thank you. And with the 8.5% assumed interest rate, reducing the COLA isn't near as big a deal as the rate of return. Because the rate of return, that 8.5%, the COLA is nowhere near 8.5%. And so as long as that money is in there or doing a front load, you're exactly right. You're going to get a lot bigger bang for your buck doing that earlier right out of the blocks.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make a... Hopefully this is a quick one, but Article 5, Section 2 on page 10 talks about the reduction from 8.5% to 8% and discussing the period of after a period of military service. My question is that a similar provision in all of the retirement plans? And that's number one question, to make sure that that's similar in all parts of the plans. And what effect does that have on the military service member and the employer with that reduction?
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Howe, I'm going to take part of this. I'm going to defer the other part to Ms. Lincheski. Very quickly, the 8.5% to 8% is what we did standard for all covered persons, and we had a few that we did last year, the vast majority of them in the pensions bill. We had a few after the actuarial study that we now adjusted this year from 8.5% to 8%. What this has to do with is if someone had maybe withdrawn money from the plan, now wants to put it back in because they were in service for 5 years, and they want to view a payback because they said, nope, I don't think I'm going to be in public service. They took that money out and they put it into another deferred comp plan or deferred investment, and then comes back after a period of time and says, I want to repay. That helps us to determine the rate that they will pay on the money that they took out of the plan so that it stays whole for its rate of return.
Madam Chair.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would. This, to me, looks like a period of time that a member of the reserves of the National Guard would go serve for a period of 1 to 5 years, come back, and then try to buy that credit back. I would have to believe that this would, for one thing, cost them more, and that would be both for the employer and the employee at that period of time, if I'm correct.
Madam Chair, I think we'll probably want to have Jill Schertz, because this is a St. Paul teacher's provision in here, and perhaps she can explain better to Representative Howe in answering his question.
Ms. Schertz, if you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Jill Schertz, Executive Director of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. Madam Chair, Representative Howe. First, we can tell you that we would never disadvantage a service member. We'd probably flip it the other way if we could, in fact. But this provision is actually very simple. All we're doing was last year we changed our investment return assumption from 8.5% to 8%. So then we had to go back through our statutes and make it clear that if someone were repaying a refund or service credit or anything else, and you'll find this exact provision through all of our statutes, that for periods of service when our investment return assumption was 8.5%, that's the amount they had to pay in terms of interest. And when we switched it to 8%, for those periods, they pay 8%. That's all this is.
Representative Howell, makes sense?
Yep.
Okay. Representative Kahn, thank you, Ms. Schertz.
Madam Chair, if I could, just before we go to Representative Kahn's question.
Chair Driscoll.
The comments by Ms. Schertz sound like somebody who's a West Point graduate, by the way.
Representative Kahn.
One comment I wanted to make about the, or ask, because I'm never so sure about what I know and what I think I know, on the COLAs. As I believe, almost every plan had a COLA that was tied to inflation, except for the St. Paul plan, which had a defined COLA that was often considerably larger than inflation.
I think we'll have
instead of paying attention to what I said, just what's the situation.
Madam Chair, I think we'll have Ms. Schertz address that one again with the specifics of St. Paul.
Welcome back. Long time.
Thank you. I should have stayed. Sorry. Jill Schertz, Executive Director of St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn. Historically, St. Paul has had a number of different COLA iterations. I think what you're referring to, we did have an ultimate rate that would adjust up to CPI capped at 5%. We eliminated that last year to bring it back more into line. And in this, we are eliminating the triggers. So where we are is 1%. And that's where our base rate has been for a number of years. So now, removing all of the triggers, we simply are at 1%.
Representative Kahn.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Members, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, or perhaps Ms. Lencheski. I'm just interested. I've seen these bills a number of times, but I've never seen a fiscal note. And we talk about the size of the numbers and all this, but there's not really any overall numbers. And why is that?
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Runbeck, as a matter of course, a fiscal note is ordered, and I believe Ms. Roberts has ordered a fiscal note, and it's due back from MMB tomorrow. And so that keeps us on the timeline that we're looking at to want to be able to move forward. And it is our intention and understanding that there is no fiscal cost in here, so we're going to be very surprised if it comes back with anything as a fiscal note other than zero.
Okay, Madam Chair, and all right. Well, I guess what I'm looking for is, you know, what is this liability growing to, or what is this, you know, these dollars that we should be putting in, and are maybe going to do next year? It'd be good to know this and talk about it publicly.
Did you wish to comment?
I would only reiterate the comments that I had before. It provides us about 13 more months to have that discussion and to talk to more stakeholders, and that'll be something that the legislature next year will end up having to address and how that's going to ultimately be put into place, Representative Runbeck.
Perhaps it would be helpful if Ms. Lencheski can follow up with Representative Runbeck with the report that we received in pensions that describes all of that, too. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Members, any other questions? All right, Representative Kahn, she came to me just as the committee meeting was beginning. She has an amendment she would like to discuss. We will not be voting on it, but you wanted to discuss it. Yes. And Paige has the amendments, if you can please, the amendment, if you can please hand that out along with the handout. And Representative Kahn, as they're doing that, why don't you describe what you wanted to discuss?
Okay. What this, many people have come to, maybe because I have the University of Minnesota and Augsburg in my district, I've often had students or people coming to me and asking the state to require divestment in something. The one thing that we specifically did after a long period of study was South Africa and the Sudan and so forth. One of the things, although I'm usually required to adopt the most liberal position that's a point presented to me, is that I do say, you know, as a member, as a former member at different times of the Pension Commission, and as someone who looks at what happens with investments, the problem is that the job of someone on the Pension Commission is really to maximize the investment potential and really to make sure that the people who are having state pensions are doing as well as they can and not making them victims of political correctness. So, and of course, the latest political correctness has been, let's get rid of any kind of a stock that has anything to do with not clean energy, energy production. So, no, again, even though I might agree with it, I always turned away from it. But the state of California has passed a law, and I've prepared that as an amendment. I was kind of looking for a place to present it, and the timing has been so screwy I couldn't figure it out. You know, like first the Pension Commission, maybe then GovOps, and maybe then state government finance. So it's, I don't think it would be appropriate to have a vote on it today, but I do want to present it, and I probably will try and present it to this bill on the floor. And so the amendment is A09, and it's essentially identical to law that was passed in California fairly recently. And what it just does is we say that
part of the, that the State Board of Investment must develop a climate change risk management strategy, and that including the following, is to looking at whether corporate management, you don't make them take a position, but the question is just, is the corporate management of the corporations you're investing in just looking at this issue? And looking at it might be, hey, great, there are fewer coal mines and coal stock is going to go way up, and that's where we should be investing. And that's one of, you know, I don't believe that that's going to be a solution. But if that was a solution, if we're looking into it, they found that out as a solution, that would be the kind of thing that we would be looking at. So then the interesting thing was to look and see who's done this. And it turned out that Yale University has done this. And the other article that I've given out before you is what Yale has done in shaping its portfolio to address climate change. And again, what they've done is they're not doing any definitive ideas of, no, get rid of this stuff if they're not taking climate change seriously. But they're just saying that you have to have people with you. In order for us to invest in a corporation, they hire outside managers to do it. So the outside managers have to understand what the issues of climate change, you know, they have to at least be considering it. They don't have to say that they're making decisions on it, but they have to do it. Now, Yale University has a very large endowment, obviously less than the state of Minnesota, but one of the things when they're considering this financial risk is that they have actually made some decisions, and they have not bought some stocks because the board of managers were refusing to take this seriously. Now, one of the things that you can say about Yale is that Yale's return on investment for the last year was 11.5%. That compares to the state of Minnesota's, and I know there are other factors, but these are just a return on investment, which I saw in one thing I saw was -0.1%, and another thing I saw was 4%. So Yale University, with this approach to looking and making decisions on climate change, is still having a return on investment that's possibly three times the result of the state of Minnesota's return on investment. So it doesn't look like it's a bad idea to emulate. So this is presenting to the members of this committee. This is the amendment. I'm obviously not asking for a vote on it today, but I do intend to bring this as an amendment to the floor.
Well, Representative Kahn, you know, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I do think that if you are serious about this proposal for the future, you might want to offer it as a bill.
It is. It is in as a bill.
Okay. All right. And then the Pension Commission would have an opportunity to discuss it at that point.
Madam
but Chair O'Driscoll, I don't know if you have any comments on
it. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn and I have had a chance to visit about this, and so she's not coming to me blind on this, and I do appreciate her willingness to have that conversation. I want to go back to a statement that Representative Lunan made before. It really depends upon the marketability. This deal that we are talking about today is very fragile. I mean, extremely fragile. And so for the last 30 days, we've been trying to put this together. We've got it together. We're hoping that the glue dries enough to be able to get it across the finish line. It could unravel at any point because of where we are at in this process. So I don't want people thinking, oh, it's a great deal. Starts out once upon a time and ends happily ever after. Daily, minute by minute, hour by hour, I'm working with people to try to keep this thing together. I don't say that because I want you to say, hey, great job, keep it up, because I will. But what I say this is, we start moving to amendments like this and including these things in, as worthy as members do want them to be in the conversations. Unfortunately, in my opinion, this is not the time to be able to have these things if we want to get all of the other stuff done right now. And so, again, I appreciate Representative Kahn wanting to bring this forward. And the comments I just shared with the group are comments that I shared with her as well personally. So it's there's no getcha gotchas or ambushing. She's been very open with me, as I've been very open with her about where we're at with this particular pensions deal for 2016. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, and that actually concludes my statements for the day as well.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, okay, at least this group has a little time to think about it and think about how nice it would be to raise our investment by a factor, but raise our return on investment by a factor of three. So
okay.
Maybe this is just the thing you need to have that bill just zip right through.
All right, members, with that, we're going to take a vote on House File 659 to the General Register. I renew my motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is on its way. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for your time and your patience as we work through this process.
All right, with that, members, we are adjourned.